Good morning and welcome back to another edition of High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne, right here on Talk 960, brought to you by Providence St. Mary Medical Center. COVID-19 cases are rising in our High Desert. Make your appointment today to protect yourself, your family, and our community. Schedule your free appointment at a convenient location near you through myturn.ca.gov. Message brought to you by trusted friends in the High Desert, Providence St. Mary Medical Center, and the San Bernardino County Department of Public Health. We're keeping it local with High Desert issues, events, and interesting people. You can hear us every weekend, Saturdays at 9 a.m. and Sundays at 8 a.m. on Talk 960 and talk960.com. Let's get to it.
Well, good morning, High Desert. It's another beautiful weekend here in the High Desert, and you are listening to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne.
Good morning. We're loving the weather, right?
It's beautiful.
I know.
We've got another amazing guest, Roxanne. I always say that, right?
I'm always truthful. You are.
Always
truthful. And I'm sure our public agrees. Our listeners do.
Absolutely. We've got another amazing guest. We have here Deanna Wilson, who is the executive director of the High Desert Community Foundation with us. And Deanna is also joined by Ryan McCachran, who is the president of the High Desert Community Foundation.
Glad to see you again.
Yes, so welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So Deanna, we're just gonna jump in because I know that our listeners are probably curious to learn more about the High Desert Community Foundation, all of the wonderful things that you guys do, how you make that happen, and possibly how they can come alongside and align with you to support the wonderful work that's being done in our community. So can you tell me how long you've been the executive director?
I've been the executive director about 5 years, and I've been with the foundation for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's been a good trip.
Well, I would say, I would hope that would be the case. Now, how old is the foundation itself?
So the foundation actually was started by the Kramer family in 1991 and became the High Desert Community Foundation in 1997. It was started as a private family foundation, and the Kramer family wanted to open the foundation to the community and have it be available just strictly for the community, for the community needs. And so that happened in 1997. And so we've been operating since then.
Great, as the High Desert Community Foundation.
Yes.
And can you tell us, give us some insight on what the Community Foundation actually does?
So we're here to partner with people for community needs. That's our main thing. And so we have a fiscal sponsor program where we offer to be an umbrella to people or groups who want to serve the community and be a charity through charitable needs, and so that's mainly what we do. And then we also offer the ability for people who want to set up a donor advice fund or an endowment fund of some sort to have a legacy that will be invested and continually serve those needs of the public that they want to serve. And so those are the two things.
Well, let me make sure that I have this correct. So part of the responsibility of the High Desert Community Foundation, what you offer is to kind of serve as an umbrella for 501c3,
yes,
for smaller entities,
right,
or individuals
mm-hmm.
that are seeking to have that type of setup, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's correct.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
And if someone was interested in pursuing that, what's required? How would they do that?
So basically, they just contact us, and we have an application that goes before our board of directors. And it has to show that they want to serve our community that we live in, the High Desert community of San Bernardino County. And then the board reviews that application to see that that it's a viable, a realistic
mm-hmm.
dream,
mm-hmm.
you know. And sometimes we encourage those people, you know, hey, so you want to feed the public or you want to serve the needy by offering groceries. Well, have you looked into possibly combining your efforts with a group that's already in operation so that we're not duplicating the same office? Yes.
A partnership. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we talk to them about all of that. And we try to get all the ducks in a row before we actually present it to the board. And they have to have, like, some type of a business plan or, like, a budget. Like, where are they planning to get the funds to make these dreams happen?
Right.
And then we go from there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then you guys also, in that scenario, if the organization is approved and accepted by the board, then they come on as what's considered an affiliate fund?
Right, right. And we also call them projects.
Okay.
And but really they use our nonprofit status to be, so they are like a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
They're using our nonprofit status to be a legal nonprofit organization to be able to accept tax deductible donations and also to accept grants that are require that affiliation.
Right. And that's really huge for a lot of our very small nonprofits.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For them to be up under such an umbrella.
Right.
It helps out quite a bit. And I think we saw a lot of that during COVID, right?
We sure did. And I'm so proud and honored to say that a number of our groups under the foundation were right on the front lines during COVID to help the people of the High Desert. Different avenues. Mostly it was grocery. We had grocery delivery program. I mean, that was pretty amazing.
Yes.
You know, to those, especially those elderly people who didn't feel like they could leave their house.
Yeah.
Didn't want to become get near other people might have COVID.
Right.
But right. That was pretty amazing how our group stepped up and really were on the front lines during that pandemic.
Right. And then so that's one of the ways in which you guys provide your resources and services, and then the other is kind of what I call the legacy building or the endowments that you refer to. And most of that, if I'm correct, is scholarships, right? So if someone wants to establish a scholarship fund for a family member or a namesake, then they would be able to do it through that program. Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Some people have an idea. For instance, I just, we had a lady who, she just wants to help cats.
Okay.
And so... She wants to help cats forever. So she wants to leave a portion of her estate in her will, a certain percentage, like 1 or 2%. So it's not conflicting with the family who might say, well, wait a minute, but what about us?
Right.
She's saying, okay, I'm going to leave 1 to 3% for cats. And she doesn't care which group does it. She just wants, after she passes away, that those funds to continue to earn interest so that they can keep going on in perpetuity.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Okay.
And she has a list of what she's interested in. She wants the cats to be fixed. She wants them to be rescued.
Oh.
She wants them to be rehomed.
Right.
You know, things like that.
Right.
So,
but
then,
those are the type
of
opportunities that are there.
Absolutely.
Through the High Desert Community Foundation. Now, Ryan, I want to ask you, as president of the High Desert Community Foundation, your role as head of the board, right, and the priorities of the board in helping this organization stay viable, how would you define that?
Well, yeah, the board, you know, obviously we're the support to make sure that the organization continues, that Deanna and the rest of the staff at the High Desert Community Foundation have what they need to operate and support the organizations that, you know, that come to us under our umbrella. You know, we're kind of like an incubator for nonprofits,
yes.
Right? There's a lot that goes into establishing a nonprofit. There's a lot of cost associated with getting licensed through the state of California, set up with your own tax ID number,
yes.
and lots of regulatory things that if they don't have to do that initially, that we provide that support to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what we hope for is that they get to such a point where they can basically do those things, go out on their own, and leave us.
Right.
Now, not all of them will, because the scholarship funds and things like that will always be there, and we'll help administer those. But a lot of those that we refer to as projects, where it's for animals or, to help with groceries or things like that,
right.
They may
services.
Ultimately have a goal and a plan to become their own nonprofit. So we provide and act as a resource for that, and the board helps support Deanna and the rest of the staff to ultimately help them accomplish that in the long term.
I have a question. How long does it roughly take to start up that nonprofit? Like, say we fill out the application, like Deanna said, it goes to the board. Roughly how long does that process take normally?
So it can take, so the board meets on a monthly basis. So they would review that application at the board meeting, the next board meeting. And so a month.
Okay.
Or however long, if they bring it to us a week before, it could be as early as
a week.
So it
could be a fast process,
yes.
Then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if they're going through the state of California and they're establishing themselves as a nonprofit.
Yes.
That could take
That's
months.
I mean.
It could
okay.
take years, depending upon how complex it
but
is.
But like you said, you're locally based right here.
Yeah.
Right. That resource will be great. So they have somebody they can actually speak to in person, find out those questions instead of calling somebody or traveling up toward, Sacramento or the head office. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And we are the only community foundation in this area.
Mm. Yeah. And one of the things I will say that I think is great about the community foundation, the High Desert Community Foundation, is that for those smaller organizations that are looking to do this nonprofit work, a lot of times they have the passion and compassion for the actual work.
Yes.
But the business side of things, administering that and overseeing that, not so much, because there's only so much you can do within a 24-hour period, right?
Right.
But one of the things that I think is very unique but necessary is that the High Desert Community Foundation helps to provide that oversight and management for these organizations so that your IRS status remains current and is not in jeopardy, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So that your financials, accounting, your budget, those type of things, you guys help with that. Am I correct?
Yes, that's true.
And so it's those kind of things that are like a godsend for smaller organizations, because when I'm talking smaller organizations, a lot of times these are organizations that have maybe one or two people that are really doing the day-to-day, right?
Yes.
And then a slew of volunteers that come alongside and help,
right?
Mm-hmm. But in order to make sure that you stay out of trouble, right? And that you really know what you're doing in that world, that realm of nonprofit, that you're on the right side of things, you guys are a tremendous help, right?
We really are. You know, that all that backroom paperwork and all of those licenses and registrations that we keep up, we love to do that. That's what we love to do. And also training these small nonprofits so they can, it gives them experience being under our umbrella. And also, sometimes when groups start up and their intentions are to support themselves by obtaining grants, sometimes those funders want those organizations to have had their 501c3 designation for 3 to 5 years.
Oh.
And so sometimes those groups will come partner with us and for that time period.
Okay.
And, yeah.
yeah.
And so, and then until they can get up and running on their own. And during that time that they're with us, they're learning. They're learning the do's and don'ts, because there's that word, that three-letter word called the IRS, that that is pretty serious.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now, for any of our listeners that are interested in learning more, either about how they can become an affiliate fund or become involved with the Community Foundation, how they can support any of the affiliate funds that are part of the community foundation. And then I'm also going to say, you know, you guys as the High Desert Community Foundation, the way that you actually raise your money to be able to support the work that you're doing is actually through some of the administrative fees for these funds, which are not a lot.
No.
Right? They're not a lot.
No, we're very reasonable.
And then, and so I think that our community is not as well aware of the support that they can provide to the High Desert Community Foundation through their donations and contributions, right? So, Deanna, I would love for you to tell our listeners how they can contact, how they can get involved, how they can learn more about the High Desert Community Foundation and support.
Okay, absolutely. Well, you know, your support of the High Desert Community Foundation is a support for our community because those funds, that's what we do. We use them to support our community and to also help the groups who are with us. And to find out more about High Desert Community Foundation, you can visit our website at www.hdcfoundation.org. Or you can give us a call at 760-242-8877.
I've got a gentleman in office with me, or I shouldn't say an office, in studio with me, that I've known for quite some time. You know, he is amazing at the work that he does. I really call him a community organizer and advocate. He comes from a family that is just, they're just servants of the community, which is amazing. So that didn't miss him. It didn't skip a generation or any of that. But please, I'm just so pleased to welcome to studio today, Sir Duplishan. He's a local community founder of I Am Love Movement, which is a nonprofit organization. I wish we had time to really delve into that whole program. First of all, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're so happy to have you here. And I'm just really excited because there's so much to talk about. Of course, you're here today to really educate us and enlighten us on this whole fentanyl crisis that we are facing. But before we jump into that, can you just give us a little bit of background about the I Am Love movement?
Yes, certainly. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for allowing me to come to your studio and just even raise the awareness about fentanyl. It is something that I hold near and dear to my heart because if not anything else, history has taught us that if we don't observe the history, we're bound to repeat it. And that's what I see with fentanyl. But the love movement is coming to the High Desert. Please get ready. We hope that you join in, and we're coming to a neighborhood near you.
Great. And we're going to have you back to really talk to us in detail about the awesome work that you're doing through that movement and how that's really going to help to transform how we, as everyday citizens, go about living our lives in this community, right?
Right.
So I'm excited about that, and we will have you back sooner than later. But like you said, today we're here to really talk about fentanyl. And, you know, fentanyl is such a concern. I'm just going to ask you, and this is a very broad-based question, but just take it where you want. What is it that we need to know as community about fentanyl?
First thing I would think we need to know, especially here in the High Desert region, is that fentanyl is one of the most powerful, is the most powerful drug that we have ever seen in mankind, in the history of mankind.
Wow.
And statistics and data shows that communities with similar demographics to ours are the most impacted. So it's, I created a campaign a couple of years ago called the Tidal Wave. See, we live in here in California, and we have earthquakes. But in other places, they may have tidal waves or typhoons. And they get warnings. This is our warning time. You know, we see what's happening. We see it on the horizon. So it's time for us to kind of batten down the hatches. It's time for us to put up our boards and prepare for the tsunami, which is fentanyl, that is coming to our community.
Now, what makes our community such a prominent target, I guess, if you will, for fentanyl and the use of fentanyl? What about our community?
We are more susceptible to drug use, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Across the nation, in fact, I think it was Pennsylvania who had the highest rates of fentanyl and opioid overdoses in the nation. We heard so much about the opioid epidemic, mm-hmm. where Big Pharma had to pay out all these billions of dollars because of them exacerbating the issue of opioid use. Those were the communities that were most impacted, were lower socioeconomic communities like ours.
Okay. So because of our statistics and what the data shows in terms of socioeconomic, that is what makes us so prone for this use,
yes.
of this particular drug. Does the addiction start?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's at that point, the first time. The ingestion of that.
Yes.
Starts, then it not only triggers the high, but it triggers the addiction.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And it's a physical dependency. You know, we have opioid receptors in our brain that when we take these synthetic opioids or any opioid, it fills that receptor. And so it becomes a physical need that you have to have it. So no longer, and that's why we're really advocating within our government to pass laws to treat this as a sickness.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times through stigma, we want to blame people like they had a choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have had a choice to take it in the first place. Maybe they did. But after that, it's no longer.
But that addiction,
yes.
point. So it's not like they had to do it two or three times or 10 times and then they're hooked. But from the very first ingestion of that, the addiction is triggered.
Yeah.
Now, I want to go back because I want to make sure that we're clear. And I'm sure there's several of our listeners that want to understand the myths about handling fentanyl. So inhaling it?
Well, if you inhale it, then of course it'll trigger because you're ingesting it. You're putting it into your body. But if you inhale it, it goes into your body, so then you can't overdose. But it's hard for that to happen, you know, because usually if you're in an area that fentanyl is suspected to be in, you're not going to be kicking up the dust, you know. You're going to be cautious. Hopefully you'll have a mask.
Okay, so for example, I'm a mom. I go into my child's room. I see a little bag of pills or something, mm-hmm. that looks a little suspect to me.
Yeah.
So I open it up, right?
Yeah.
I'm not putting myself in danger if there's fentanyl in there by opening it up because mm-hmm. I'm going to breathe, right?
No, it's very rare. It comes into a pill form or usually a liquid form.
Okay.
And when it's in the pill form, it's compressed, unless it was broken up, you know, unless they broke up that pill, so now it's a powder form, so it can become airborne.
Okay.
You know, so it's almost like you have to snort it.
Okay.
You have to
ingest
it.
Okay. So with that, what do we need to know? I'm a mom. I've got a son. My son has taken this fentanyl, and I come upon him. And he's in an overdose state.
Oh, my goodness.
What do I need to do? What do I need to know? What do I need to be equipped with?
First of all, and that's what I'm imploring our community. This is how we prepare for this. We have to get Narcan in everyone's person. You need to carry it in your purse. You need to carry it in your car. We've been going around to every location in the high desert that we suspect may have a confrontation with someone who overdosed, just to keep it in their medicine cabinet. And we can get it. We can give it away freely. You can contact I Am Love. You can contact the Institute for Public Strategies, and we'll deliver it to you. We'll come out and bring it to you. That's how important this is. But
so let's talk about what Narcan actually is,
yes.
what it is and what it does.
Well, Narcan is the opioid receptor blocker.
Okay.
So usually when someone is given Narcan, which is the form that we offer it, is in a nasal spray.
Okay.
If in a hospital, they may give it to you intravenously through an IV or some other formats. But here locally, we just give you a nasal spray that basically blocks those opioid receptors to bring you out of that overdose state.
Okay.
See, when people die from fentanyl overdose, it's that their respiratory system actually relaxes to a point that it stops working.
Okay.
You know, so essentially just go to sleep and don't wake up.
So I want to have the Narcan. I want to learn how to administer that properly.
Yes.
And then after I've done that, what's my next move? Is that the 911 call? Is that getting them to emergency? What's my next move?
Your first move is calling 911.
Okay.
Because you want 911 to be rolling on their way while you're administering.
Okay.
Okay. So the first thing that you're going to do is call 911. And then after you call 911, you're going to administer. Actually, before that, you might want to rub your knuckles on their sternum. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that they're not conscious. You know, you want to you maybe tap them on the face even just to make sure that they're unconscious, you
okay.
know, see where they're at. Then you can administer the Narcan. And Narcan is safe. For example, if someone is unconscious because of an alcohol overdose or something like that, it's not going to have any adverse effect to them. You know, so I would rather someone use Narcan and they didn't need it than someone not use it, you know, and they did need it.
Okay. And so the first step is place the 911 call.
Yes.
Administer the Narcan.
Yes.
And then take it from there. Hopefully
yes.
the paramedics or whatever is there.
Will be on the way. You typically want to roll them over on their side.
Okay.
After you administer the Narcan, which you spray it into their nostril, just in case they vomit, you know, so they won't choke, things
okay.
like that. So it's almost like CPR, you know,
okay.
kind of the same.
And so
principles.
If listeners want to learn more about Narcan, fentanyl, how can they contact either you or I heard you say the Institute for Public Strategies
yes.
so that they can get that information and also get the Narcan?
Yes. You can reach us at 833-567-LOVE. That's 833-567-LOVE, and that's 5683. So it's 833-567-5683. Or you can reach the Institute for Public Strategies. I don't know their number by heart, but you can reach them online. You can reach the County of San Bernardino's District Attorney's Office. They also have resources. You can see trainings of how to administer Narcan online. If you would like any of these entities to come out and do demonstrations and trainings, we will come out free of charge. We're looking forward to helping.
To be educated around this fentanyl opioid crisis. But we really want to thank you for coming in today and sharing this time. And I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing out in the community for a number of years. You're not new to the game, but you have been consistent. And I want to thank you and your beautiful family for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Peace, bread, and love. Bye, Desert.
Thanks again for being a part of our conversation. You can reach out to us and let us know what you want to talk about. Send us an email at roxannesgaffiti@edbroadcasters.com. High Desert Dialogue, Conversations with Regina and Roxanne, has been brought to you by Provident St. Mary Medical Center. COVID-19 cases are rising in our high deserts. Make your appointment today to protect yourself, your family, and our community. Schedule your free appointment at a convenient location near you through myturn.ca.gov. Message brought to you by trusted friends in the high desert, Provident St. Mary Medical Center, and the San Bernardino County Department of Public Health. We'll talk to you next weekend.